Our guest today is Aurora Kleiberberg. Aurora is the CEO of Medal TV. Medal TV is the largest platform for recording and sharing short gaming clips among friends. She was previously the co-founder and CEO of Megacool, which was acquired by Medal TV in 2019. Before starting Megacool, she held the position of VP of Business and Marketing at Deribit, the Norwegian indie game studio sensation behind the successful Fun Run game series. She holds an MSc in Comtech Engineering and Entrepreneurship from the Norwegian University of Science and Technology. She is deeply passionate about helping game studios succeed and giving back to the Nordic entrepreneurial ecosystem. In today's episode, Aurora tells us about the unique challenges of starting a developer-focused product and getting adoption from scratch. She tells us about her unique and counterintuitive approach to starting her company before she even knew what the company would do, and her approach to figuring out what the company would eventually do by actually listening to users. She tells us about the unique challenges and opportunities with referrals and virality, and how these can unlock tremendous growth in a time of escalating acquisition costs. For a unique perspective into bootstrapping, figuring out a product, scaling, virality, referrals, and much, much more, we're thrilled to have Aurora on this show.
I'm very excited to welcome Aurora Kleiberberg to the Mobile User Acquisition Show. Aurora, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Shaman, for having me. It's been in the works for a while, so I'm excited.
Yeah, you came very highly recommended, and I've followed a lot of your writings and the deconstructions that you'll speak about in this interview. Just been very impressed. So it's a pleasure and honor to have you, Aurora.
Oh, awesome. Thank you so much.
So let's start with something you said. In the summer of 2015, we spent 10 weeks prototyping a new thing every week. Tell me more about this. What were these prototypes and what inspired all of this?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. That's obviously about the origins of Megacool. In 2015, Nick, who founded Deribit, the creator of Fun Run, and myself decided to move to the States. We were previously in Norway and wanted to really embrace that very ambitious American startup culture, which we felt we were lacking back in Norway. The way we wanted to go about this was to prototype 10 different concepts over summer, spend 1 week on each concept, and then decide what would eventually become Megacool. And the process for this was inspired by Vuga, who at the time had this prototyping funnel where they put in, let's say, 40 prototypes, and then 10 came out to be tested in the market. Maybe 5 went on to soft launch and 1 made it out on the other end. We wanted to apply this concept to how we went about deciding what our next venture would be. These 10 different prototypes had all sorts of shapes and forms. Some just became like mock-ups that you could move around through keynote presentations. But it was really to make sure that whatever we ended up building was actually something people wanted. So that was the baseline. But then, ironically enough, only what ended up becoming Megacool was actually the only game-related idea. So we wanted to test other things as well. So we tested a photo sorting app on your phone, tested a CMS tailored to services like hairdressers, and then also worked a little bit on a privacy and monetization focused solution for reading articles online.
That's crazy. And I know you said you almost wanted to move away from games. You had only one gaming related concept. And I am impressed by the sheer variety and heterogeneity in the concepts that you did describe. And to do one per week, and that's a very aggressive pace. So what happens next? So you make 10 weeks, presumably coming up with 10 prototypes. What happens next?
Yeah, so one of these weeks, we're attending a hackathon, and we build out this concept, which we refer to as Onboard. And it's really about building a feature-rich and easy-to-use waitlist tool for game launches. Based on the feedback we're getting from that, I believe it was mostly around, this is something that a lot of people have. We didn't necessarily see that we could add as much feature-rich content on top of it to really build a sustainable business at the time. I think since then, there's been a lot of waitlist tools that have done really well. None of them have gone on to be big businesses. Through this, we were like, well, we're constantly asked for advice on organic growth, and we would help a lot of companies do that. So how can we do this more at scale? And how can we really figure out what is one thing that we're helping people with in terms of organic growth that we can build the solution around? So we started dissecting and publishing these dissections for popular games at the time, like Crossy Road, Agar.io, Candy Crush. And we pointed out all the things that did well to create growth and all the opportunities they left out. And I know that Miniclip actually implemented some of the changes we proposed after the Agar.io post. So that was pretty cool. But what we did about these dissections was that anywhere we gave suggestions, we linked to a beta signup page and had people sign up to beta, not necessarily saying much about what the beta would be. And then ended up interviewing the people that signed up and trying to understand exactly what they needed and where we could build out tools. The dissection part was really inspired by useronboard.com. They didn't focus on gaming at all. So we saw that as an opportunity to differentiate. I think right now I want to call out growth.design as probably the best solution out there.
Yeah, Samuel Hulick from User On Board was on the show. He is as hilarious person as he is on the dissection side. So great stuff. But back to our story, you were like, hey, there's going to be a beta. There was no product because you yourself didn't know what it would be. In some sense, you're building what the customer wants. And the way you describe it, it makes me realize how hard it is to not be attached to your own ideas and just stay open to what the customers will say. Right. And it also sounds like the initial prototype of Onboard, you guys said, this gives us a starting point, but we're not going to build that, but we're actually going to listen to what users actually want. Yeah, that's very impressive. Like I said, to just distance yourself emotionally from the stuff and actually listen to your users. And when you're listening to your users, what were some of the things that folks said? And how did these insights ladder up to the product you eventually built?
It was two-sided. I really want to give a shout out to Candy Writer, the folks over there, Kevin and Nadir. And if you don't know Candy Writer, they've actually been working on putting out new genre-defining games. Early on, it was What's the Pick? And a lot of like, what's the games? Then it was Letter Soup, which we've seen tons of clones from since. They also did Adult Coloring Book, which I don't actually know if they were the first to do the coloring books, but they were one of the most memorable and engaged people that we spoke to. They told us that they were constantly looking for growth mechanics where they were the first one to exploit them until platform would turn it down. For instance, they were among the first to really take advantage of screenshot sharing to Facebook, which was one of the main growth drivers for What's the Pick back in the day. They were really eager to work with us and figure out how they could implement the next big growth feature. And so we built out the alpha version with them, which was good because they were iOS only for the games that we worked on. And that really helped us move faster, only focusing on one platform. So we did that with Adult Coloring Book and Letter Soup. That was super exciting to see growth trajectory.
Yeah, just to jump in, when you say the alpha version, can you talk, for folks who don't know, can you describe the product and what it did?
So going back to like how we ended up with what it became, both Candy Write as well as our experience with FunRun was really speaking to how do we make it super easy for users to capture and share content from their games. Screenshots had been a way to do that, but for most games, it didn't really capture what the game was really about. And for FunRun, it was more around all the funny moments that happen when you're playing with friends. All the hilarious moments where you're pulling a friend back with magnet right before you're crossing the finish line. Adult Coloring Book, for instance, sharing just a screenshot of the final moment is not as unique as sharing a time lapse of you actually constructing that drawing. And another thing that we were talking with them about, which really resonated, was to tie this all with referral programs, because referral programs had been huge for non-gaming services like Dropbox and Uber, but we hadn't seen them enter the gaming space yet. And so we wanted to build that out with them. So the alpha version was a light GIF recording solution that was tied to a referral program.
By that, you mean a user could record a GIF, share it with friends, and they would be incentivized to do so. Yeah. If the friend accepted, they would get in-game currency.
Then other supporting things for this was that Everplay was pretty big at the time. So we spoke to a lot of studios that were using Everplay, but what they kept telling us was that we know there's something there, but we don't think that the way Everplay works, which is similar to how Replicate worked at the time, the user needs to say, I want to record something, and then they need to say, oh, I want to stop whatever is happening. And I want to share this potentially multiple megabit file through a social network. And there are so many steps as well as places along that way where the user would drop. They were all like, this is so cool. Like, our game is so cool. There needs to be a better way. And so we knew we needed to differentiate from that. What came out of that was that we focused on only sharing highlights and making it as easy as possible to share those highlights. I read a study a while ago where I think it was from Microsoft that people's attention span on mobile is like 8 seconds. And so we've capped the recordings to 15 seconds and our default is 5.
Yeah. And I know you've mentioned earlier, but I think what made the difference was that you treated GIFs as almost the standard of the output rather than a video file. That sounds like every play was like, expose this entire video. You're like, let's just go do a small snippet.
Yeah, at the time, we also looked at what format delivers the best across the sharing destinations. And a animated GIF was actually playing better than a video. It would usually auto loop while in a video you need to play. But I want to add that since then, we do now support both video and GIF, but the quality is still in the GIF format because we pass it on through to the destination depending on which it's optimized for, if it's GIF or video. So it can do both.
Right. The way you described the workings of the product Megacool, sounds like the developers have to integrate the SDK in order for a user to be able to record. And what isn't as obvious is that developers have to integrate it in a way that users actually understand what's going to happen. And the users have to use it correctly rather than, you know, have it be a feature in the game that a user never notices or finds out about. So like multiple layers here, like you have to educate the developers. They have to educate the users in a sort of product focused way. So how did you think through this, what would appear to be a multiple layer problem?
That's a great question. I think first and foremost, we were approaching this from a perspective of being game developers ourselves, right? Like what would make us do this and what would make us understand what to do? A story I like to tell when I get a question like that is back in 2014, 2015, when I was still with Dirtybit, we had this big game studio that was building an ad network at the time approach us and tell us about this concept of rewarded video ads. At the time, we only had rewarded video ads hidden in a challenge scene, just like a lot of challenges that you could complete. 20 coins for watching a video. And they told us that, well, if you move this rewarded video to within the game loop, you're actually going to monetize way better. We were so reluctant because we were so scared of the impact on retention. They showed us numbers. We're still reluctant. They eventually flew to our office and showed us exactly where to prompt the user, how to prompt the user, and all of that. And we implemented the changes. We were convinced to try it out. And after that, we did a case study with ChartBoost, which was now like 50-50 split on revenue from in-app purchase versus ads. And we came from like a 15-85 split. It was really huge.
Yeah.
And this, we're talking 2015. And then through my journey with Megacool, I don't think it was until 2017, 2018, until we started to really see rewarded video ads being the norm in everything. Yeah. Having this experience, I knew that it wasn't just enough that we had credibility from being game developers ourselves, but we needed to educate our users the same way. And so we actually took the dissection piece forward. And whenever we found bigger developers that we wanted to work with, we made similar dissections to explain exactly how to communicate it. It's all about how do you communicate to the user that this is first and foremost a value add for them, and how do you make it as easy as possible for them to follow through. And so we've also done a lot of content marketing on that. But it's really like a chicken and an egg situation, right? If you're looking at a studio that has implemented any growth feature and they haven't done it well, but they are doing well for other reasons, it's easy to just replicate what they're doing without necessarily getting the benefits. And so it took a while before we got an implementation in place that did really well that other people could follow. I think working with the Cephalab team on their game Cats was really one of the catalysts for that.
Yeah, it sounds like you were effectively consultants. You're treating this almost like an enterprise sales implementation. You had to do it for them, because if you left it for them to figure out, it wouldn't necessarily work out the way you intended it. Also because it wasn't like a one-size-fits-all implementation. It sounded like the product had to be customized for different games and different game loops.
I think this is a good opportunity to also mention why we wanted to do this and really help the game studios. With FunRun, we didn't have funds to spend new acquisition. Like, our LTV was really low. We always had to think very creatively. And we knew that there were so many games out there that didn't have the resources or didn't have the time to build these things out themselves. And so we looked at what we were doing as a way to help the indies, as well as driving down the effective user acquisition costs for the larger players. That was a big part of why we put so much effort into doing this.
And I think this can be especially valuable for indie developers that don't have access to the crazy funds that sometimes scaling UA can require. I'm also curious, right? So talking of SDKs, term that I've tended to use is SDK fatigue, just because, again, in my years working with studios, there's been a certain resistance to integrating yet another SDK, as a lot of developers put it. Did you face that friction? How did you address that?
Definitely experienced that and had to address it multiple times. It wasn't just the SDK fatigue, though. It was also, well, we'll just build it ourselves. Mm-hmm. And I think we're still waiting for that to happen. But really on the SDK fatigue, we tried to speak to developers. We tried to structure things in a way so that it would be easy for a developer to go to our docs and be like, huh, I wonder how much time this will take me. And then like an hour later, it would be integrated. It would be like a prototype that they could show their team and be like, hey, what do you think? Should we integrate it deeper, really communicate everything in a good way to our users? So we spent a lot of time on our documentation and making that as simple as possible. Obviously, you don't speak to necessarily the decision makers then, but we try to bite-step the decision makers by being very smart about that. And also like the content marketing, the credibility, not just from us, and we're very much not an ad network. We want to make that distinction clear. But then I think the most important thing is that we've been persistent over time. Because you see all these companies start, you integrate their SDK, and then they can go bonkers. And then you're like, well, what do I do now? And so us being persistent at the conferences, everywhere, has built sustained credibility, I'd say.
Sure. Just to switch gears a bit, you've seen viral and referral mechanics for so many games from Close Up. And obviously, you've dissected a lot of them as well. So what have you seen are some of the common mistakes that developers make while setting up referral-based flows or viral flows or invite-based flows?
Great question again. Virality won't fix a broken game. I think, unfortunately, a lot of the developers we're working with come to us and are like, this will be great. People want to share the content because my game is so great. And then the game isn't necessarily as great as they hoped. And they have bigger fish to fry. I try to be candid where I can. Obviously, I shouldn't kill anyone's dream, but I try to help and try to address the core game first. Then the other thing that we're seeing is that people just slapping on growth features. So a very common thing is to just add a share to Twitter or share to Facebook button in your game. I think that's still persistent. But in 2021, you're not necessarily seeing games go viral on Twitter anymore. Yeah. I mean, there are exceptions, but predominantly all sharing happens through private messaging destinations. So putting those share buttons in there for Facebook and Twitter is most likely not something that your users is going to use and are just taking up game inventory space. And then not actually communicating to the user what is going on, why this is beneficial for them, how they're going to do this to, in the case of referral, getting the reward. Because the thing about the referrals are that it's not just about the sharing. Someone needs to be on the recipient side and follow through on their end. And so if you as a user think that, well, my friend said they clicked the link, I should get the reward, then that isn't usually what needs to get done. Your friend needs to actually click the link, open the app, and trigger the SDK call on the other end for the reward to come. And so there's frustration among users if they don't understand that, which is hard to educate.
Yeah, and a lot of these distinctions are seemingly subtle, but so critical. I know some of the blog posts that you have out there, you talked about how important the clarity of the communication is, because somebody who's receiving the message, if they don't know what they've got, and there's just no point in the referral flow. And I've seen some of that in my experience as well. When you're looking at a referral flow, what are some of the KPIs that you would recommend looking at? And also, if you're looking at certain KPIs, what might be some of the important ways to impact these KPIs as well?
So from a high level standpoint, we're defining it through three metrics. So we talk about feature engagement, which is someone is playing a game and they see the share capabilities and they hit share. That's the first one. That's feature engagement. Second is share ratio, which is you're hitting that share button, but you're actually hitting a destination or tapping a destination to share to. And the third is install ratio, which is from someone actually sharing and a friend starts to play. If I were to start with feature engagement, that is top of funnel, right? That's where it's really important to make it clear to the user what's happening. And what they have to do. So things to consider there are actually having incentivized referrals. That's a great way, because as a user, I'm more likely to share something to a new friend who's not in game if I knew that that's how I get the incentive. If there is no incentive, I'm more likely to re-engage an existing player because I know it's going to be relevant for them. And ways that you can also increase the feature engagement is to actually add sharing capabilities to several places of your game. You can do it in the store, in community or friends part of the game, and you can do it post-game. So have a preview of the gameplay that was just recorded and share that. So that's just a few examples. And talking metric-wise, based on our data, anything over 15%, we consider good. So 15% of your player base, or sort of your DAUs actually, are engaging with sharing features on any given day. And then when you look at the share ratio, it's about how you're hitting share and actually selecting a shared destination. The reason that this is not the same step is that we're tied to the native share flow, share sheets. And you don't want to clutter the view with a lot of the shared destinations too soon. So you want to bundle them on one share experience. And people can drop off here because they're just exploring the feature. They're not intending to share. Maybe they don't have the destination they would prefer to share to. So this, again, comes down to communication. And this is also where we really recommend having a preview of the content you're actually sharing, so you know what's going to happen. And in terms of metrics here, we recommend anything over 25%, which is considered good. And the reason it's not 100 is that you have so many users that are constantly going to be clicking around anyways. Yeah. And so with not the intention of something happening. So this is more based on some realistic metrics. And the last part, which is usually what people are most focused on, is the install ratio. That is someone selecting a shared destination and a friend actually going into play. And a few reasons for this also not being 100% is that there's so much that can go wrong in the communication to the friend. There are also shared destinations that don't allow you to have a link so you can actually correctly attribute this install. And there might also be that the reward isn't enticing for the sender to properly follow through on having their friend join. And here we're looking at recommending anything over 10% as a good share ratio.
Yeah, that's such a seemingly simple flow, but you just described exactly how complex and multi-layered it is. And what's also impressive, especially for somebody looking at it from the outside in, is how each of those single steps can be optimized and improved, and as you just pointed out. And I think that's something that a lot of outsiders don't quite appreciate because it just seems like a relatively simple flow. When you looked at a lot of these flows, what are some of the things that have surprised you?
I think the first one is really how far we're yet to come. I think the analogy of the reward of video ad in apps, like how long it took for that to become mainstream was there. I think it's still really hard to do this in a way that is easy to communicate and make sure that the players understand it and want to participate. So that's one thing. Another thing is how dominant private messaging apps are for this. It's still surprising because it's something that I keep having to educate developers on, because I think everyone still would very much like to go viral in a public space like Twitter. But now it's more like close-knit communities. When I say private messaging, it's not necessarily just one-to-one, a group of friends on WhatsApp or even like a Discord community can be a shared destination. Another thing that we didn't really touch on, but how hard some platforms or dominant players like Facebook makes external sharing, which also breaks the attribution flow a lot of times. So it makes it hard to measure the success, even though there were success there. One example I'd say is that WhatsApp, for instance, on Android, they allow you to share both the link, the message, which we preset just to ease the conversion rate, and the GIF or video, whichever we want. While on WhatsApp iOS, you can only share either the text and the link or the GIF. Yeah. So yeah, it's hard.
Yeah, I didn't know that. Some of your blog posts, you've shown how dominant private messaging platforms are, and that nobody talks about this when they talk about going viral. I imagine you guys had that visibility into that data because you have the SDK and you see the number of messages that are getting sent. But otherwise, it's just hard for any outsider to conceive of exactly how impactful this can be. And when you also think about it, at least a lot of casual games I have seen have tended to have very strong key factors. Some, of course, are intentional about it by using flows of the sort that you described, that a lot of them, even without those flows, are. When I have looked at those on Teams, I've always hypothesized that these are private messaging platforms, but we never really know. But it sounds like you do, and you have the data, and we'll perhaps link to some of those posts. Go ahead, sorry.
It's interesting. It's coined as the dark social because you don't have visibility into it.
This has been a fascinating conversation. We've covered a lot of ground and I've certainly learned so much. Virality is a little bit of a buzzword. You obviously talked about your own personal journey, which I find very brave and instructive in coming up with a product and being completely open to what it could be, but also you've gone deep on what has been around for a long time in terms of virality and referrals and build and convey a very nuanced understanding of that. Very impressive. I've certainly taken a lot of notes, Aurora, and I'm excited to put this out into the world. Before we let you carry on, could you tell folks how they can find out more about you and everything you do?
Definitely reach out to me on LinkedIn or Twitter. Ideally, email is most responsive. My email is aurora@medal.tv, and I should probably also share that since we started, we got acquired by medal.tv, which is working within the same genre, but it's consumer-focused platform, primarily for PC gaming. We've now also launched an Android app, which lets players run Medal while they're playing in any mobile game. And with the tap of a button, you have the X seconds that you want to record from that gameplay, which is really good for communities, as well as developers who want to make bug testing easier while the game is still being developed. Medal is growing rapidly, so we're looking for product managers specifically for our social push. So if you're interested in the space, I'd love to talk to you. And we also have a subsidiary called top.gg, which is the largest Discord server list. And we also have exciting roles there.
Thank you so much for being a guest on the Mobile User Acquisition Show. It's a pleasure and honor to have you.
Thank you so much. This has been great. Thank you for having me.